just one section of a creative world where new attractions for Disneyland are conceived. Now, a great deal of time, sweat, and a few tears were expended on all this, but there's a lot of satisfaction in developing ideas into realities which become a part of Disneyland.
Welcome back to The Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge. Disneyland, where one of the most important attractions is food. My next guest is a noted personality in the Northern California world of food and wine. She is the author of the book Eat Like Walt, The Wonderful World of Disney Food. It is great to say hello to Marcy Carriker-Smothers. Marcy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ed.
I've read over the past half a year or so two what are considered definitive biographies of Walt Disney. None of them touch upon this. Walt Disney and food. This is a fascinating look at this man in so many different ways. So of all of these books, how did you figure out to be able to kind of write one through the lens of food?
Well, I knew that I wanted to write about the food at Disneyland because food tastes better at Disneyland and it's the happiest place on earth. However, my agent said to me, you're going to have to come up with something really unique because in the age of bloggers and Instagram and all that, what are you going to do that's different? So I started doing some research. I found in a website called Scribd, where people upload things to it, it's kind of like a Pinterest for words, an insert from the Independent Press Telegraph from July 1955, where Walt said, "Welcome to the Kingdom of Good Eating, where the food is as fabulous as the fun, like Adventureland and Fantasyland. Dining at Disneyland is an attraction unto itself." And then I knew I had the book because I wanted to do the culinary history, but now I had the proof that he had intended the food experience to be as immersive and entertaining as the rides themselves.
Disneyland opens in 1955, but you say its culinary history goes all the way back to 1923 when Walt Disney first climbs off that train and arrives in Hollywood for the first time. So how did it develop so much earlier than the park did itself?
Well, I think what I attribute to that is that, yes, he came to, you know, Hollywood in 1923. By the time, you know, Mickey Mouse had made him so famous by 1934, he had a recipe printed, Walt Disney's recipe printed in Better Homes and Garden magazine, and it's called Macaroni Mickey Mousse. Some people think that's a typo, the mousse. They think it's supposed to be Mickey Mouse, but it's not, because a mousse can also be a molded casserole like this macaroni and cheese dish that was published in 1934. And so that recipe is in the book. All the recipes are vintage to Walt's era and authentic, and many of them came from his home that have never been published before, because Eat Like Walt is a time capsule of Walt's life. So it ends just after he passes away, when three of the restaurants he championed in New Orleans Squares opened.
Mid-century, Disneyland opens. And you think back to that time, what an amusement park was. Disneyland changed the landscape of what a theme park was, what the family experience was. And at that point, you would go to an amusement park, you'd get hot dogs, hamburgers, pizza, ice cream, and that was it. That was the culinary selection. He took food and elevated food to the level of an attraction. How important was that for just the presentation of Disneyland as a whole?
Well, I mean, I think that's the whole experience, of course, is, you know, it's just like that things were themed early on. You know, it's true about the hot dogs and hamburgers. You needed to have those kind of things, like, for instance, the Fantasyland. On purpose, Walt had them there because families would be on the go trying to get for ride to ride. But then he had the Red Wagon Inn, Swift's Red Wagon Inn, which is now the Plaza Inn. And it's worth noting that Walt didn't run any of the feeding operations, as he called them, in Disneyland in 1955. They were all leased out. But he, with the Red Wagon Inn, his idea was for families to have somewhat of a fancy meal at a fair price when you wanted to sit down and relax. And then as time went on, the food started being themed to the land. Certainly in Frontierland it was. You would see menus with Davy Crockett this, you know, and things that were reflective of that era. And then it evolved into the Blue Bayou restaurant in New Orleans Square. The Blue Bayou is believed to be the first, if not the first, themed restaurant in America. And it was ready, the Blue Bayou was ready when Walt dedicated New Orleans Square in 1966, but the Pirates of the Caribbean ride was not. And so Walt said he didn't want to open the restaurant because it wouldn't be a good show with the boats floating by. And sadly, as a result, Walt died later that year, and he was never able to dine at the Blue Bayou. But of course, that's themed as a southern, you know, plantation, and the food is all from New Orleans. That's the way it's, the food is very authentic to that land.
Here's something that really jumped out at me. Is it true that Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room was first conceived as a restaurant?
Oh, it's such a good story, Ed. I wish we had time. That's just like a lot, but essentially, yes. So the first place that it was going to be, and that the photographs of the concept art are in it, like Walt, would be behind the parade gate off of Main Street, USA, and it was going to be an amphitheater with a Confucius-like character, an audio-animatronic character that would tell fortunes and tell stories while the guests ate. Mm-hmm. And then they moved it to, Walt decided to move it over to Adventureland, where the Walt Disney Enchanted Tiki Room is. There is concept art that shows it, how it would have looked, very similar with the four quadrants, had it been a restaurant. And there's three things that stayed to show that it was a restaurant. One was recently removed, but one is the restrooms. All California sit-down restrooms had to have a restaurant that have a restroom. So there are those little restrooms that are tucked in the corner of the Garden of the Gods, the secret restrooms, I call them, because there's never a line there. Mm. And then the actual console that's beneath the bird fountain, that is where they were going to bus. So you can still pop open those cupboards and see where they would have stacked the dishes.
Wow.
And the restaurant chairs were used as a seating for a very long time. They were only removed in 2002 with the benches that we know today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the short version. And the fun thing is also that the first audio animatronic human head was not Mr. Lincoln, like most people believe. It was this Chinese Confucius character for the Chinese-style restaurant that Walt was planning.
Now, again, we talked about how this book gives us a glimpse into the life of Walt Disney from the perspective of food. Let's talk about his own personal relationship with food. Walt at home, did he eat at home? Did he eat out a lot? How did that work?
Well, Walt, you know, despite being a very complex man, had very simple taste when it came to food, and his daughter Diane always used to say it's just the way he was raised with not a lot of money in that era. And so he always ate quite, you know, very simply, and at home he had a housekeeper, and her name, which was nicknamed Fufu, her name's Thelma Howard, but Walt called her his Mary Poppins. And so he came home almost every night and ate with Lillian and the family, if he had the grandkids over, and Ron and Diane. Lily and Walt often ate on a TV tray in front of the television. So, you know, you would not necessarily what you would think of somebody of Walt's high power.
Sure.
And really, one of the fascinating things that I found in my research at the Walt Disney Family Museum was the list of Walt's favorite foods that he gave to his Fufu, to his Mary Poppins, of what he liked. And she posted it on the refrigerator and used it for reference. And the Walt Disney Family Museum exhibited there. They've allowed it to be published. And I think if you look at what you see Walt's signature loops, you see what he likes, spam and eggs. He liked, you know, roasted meats with potatoes. He was very, very sure to say only one vegetable with meals, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He liked Jell-O and simple desserts. So that, you know, he would eat at home with the cook, which made everything from scratch. If he did go out, now this is also kind of fun. I worked with an archivist at Walt Disney Archives, and they went through Walt's diaries from the beginning of time in 1940 at a studio till he passed away. Where did Walt eat when he didn't eat at the studio in one of his restaurants or at home? So now you can actually go to the restaurants that are still there and eat like Walt would, like the Tam O'Shanter, for instance, is very famous and people make yogurt. So, yes, I hope that answered your question. He ate at home most of the time, and he ate simple foods, and when he did go out, it would usually be to a kind of a restaurant where you could get, you face it, wouldn't be a fancy restaurant, like Chasen's or Chili, for instance.
What I always liked about Walt Disney was he was his own personal focus group. So he had his own, he had an apartment at Disneyland. So there were many stories how many mornings he would simply get up, come down just before the park would open, and stand in line for coffee with everybody else who was in the park that day. He'd have a hat on or whatever, and you wouldn't realize, hey, that's the guy I watch on TV. And so he would watch, and he would take everything in that was going on at Disneyland. He had such a relationship with the each fine detail of that operation. Now, let's talk about the recipes in this wonderful book. How did you decide what to put in and what to leave out?
Well, the one thing that is, it had to be authentic to Walt's era, so that was a very, kind of pretty narrow if you look at it, because nobody was saving the recipes at Disneyland back in his day until later in the 60s. So for Disneyland, the recipes come from the restaurants, mostly from New Orleans Square, Tahitian Terrace, for example. They have three or four recipes. One of the recipes for the Polynesian ribs is on eatlikewalt.com, so you can eat like Walt tonight if you want. And then there, some of them I had to recreate. Just a few I had to recreate. There was the tea cakes that were iconic at the studio. They still are at the studio, and they still are at Imagineering. They were from Martino's Bakery that was founded in 1926, but it's a secret recipe. Try as I might, they didn't want to share it, which I understood. So it took me, with a professional baker, 40 tries to replicate that recipe till I felt it was close enough. I didn't want it to be identical. But what I had to do was, like, sort of culinary CSI, I would go in and I would say, I'm allergic to almonds. Are there any nuts in this? You know, and that's how I eliminated potential ingredients. Like, and I really did say this. I said I was allergic to lemon juice because it felt like there was something tart in it. I looked in the garbage because I went to see, I mean, I figured it was a Depression-era recipe, so it'd be cheap ingredients, but I was looking in their garbage multiple times on different days. So that's what, though, I did recreate some. And others from his home, from Walt's home, were in the archives. It just had not been published before because they were found in Walt's secretary's desk. So I worked with a professional recipe tester, and things like marshmallow pudding, clam chowder, that were what Walt was served at home, and you can make those recipes as well.
What I love most about that response was that you just gave some network executive one heck of an idea, a TV show called Culinary CSI, which you now know we're going to see somewhere next fall on one of the major networks. I love
that. Well, I'm glad I wrote about it first, Ed, so maybe they'll come to me. Yeah, no, I mean, it really was fun. It was fun because, you know, you wanted to...
Sure.
I really... Because you can't get to the... My idea was I wanted everyone to be able to eat like Walt, and unless you live in L.A., you wouldn't be able to get those tea cakes. Another great example of a recipe is there's only one restaurant in the history of Disneyland that had someone's name on it other than Walt Disney, and that's Don DeFore's Silver Banjo Barbecue. It didn't last very long, but it was in New Orleans Square when the Frito House, Casa de Fritos, moved across the way to where Rancho del Zocalo is now. And the Don DeFore was a TV actor from Hazel, and Hazel, and Ozzie and Harriet. He got the barbecue sauce from his restaurant from Love's in Southern California in the Valley, and after a while, Love's couldn't supply him with sauce anymore, so he took the sauce to UCLA's chemist lab, and they broke down the ingredients, and then his wife worked to figure out the proportion. So that recipe kind of was lost, and his sons, Don DeFore's sons, went back into the kitchen last year, recreated the sauce from their mother's notes, and gave me the exclusive to the Silver Banjo barbecue sauce that was like Walt. So, yeah, I mean, and these guys took like a week to do it.
Sure.
So it was really, it shows the love that people have for Disneyland, Walt's Disneyland, his era, and he loved to sit outside, you know, where the River Bell is now, and where that's where Walt would, one of his places he loved to sit because he could see the rivers of America, he could see his Mark Twain, he could see his Columbia sailing ship, and have barbecue.
That's what I like, the detail in this book, the meticulous detail in this book. A great idea. So let's say you're a family and you already have plans, you're going to Disneyland this year, even if you're going to Disney World this year. This is a great idea. Get the book, try the recipes, eat like Walt before you go to Walt's place. I think that's a really neat way to kind of get yourself motivated and get the whole family excited before you actually even head to Disneyland this year. I think that's a really cool idea. This is a tremendous book on so many different levels. The book, once again, Eat Like Walt, The Wonderful World of Disney Food. It gives a glimpse into the man, Walt Disney, unlike any other book ever has. We've heard every perspective on Disney except this one until now. It is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It is a wonderful read. The recipes are tremendous. Marcy Carricker-Smothers, best of luck with the book, and thank you so much for joining us here on The Weekend.
Thank you, Ed.
Stay with us. More to come. I'm Ed Kalenge, and this is The Weekend.